Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
$300 million to more than $500 million. That is the budget hole the MBTA could face in fiscal year 2022, and that's after figuring out how to fill a $720 million gap for this fiscal year. With a statewide unemployment rate right now that is the worst in the nation, more people working from home, high demand from essential workers on bus lines, and the risk of COVID-19 infection in closed spaces, how does our public transit bounce back? Well, let's turn to MBTA General Manager Steve Poftak to talk about that. Steve, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Well, thanks for having me again.
And listeners, if you have a question for the head of the T, call us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Steve, yesterday we had Boston Mayor Marty Walsh on, and we were reflecting on the fact that the Commonwealth has now lived through basically 7 months of this pandemic. How are you? How's it going?
Oh, I'm fine. It's a challenge to manage in this environment, but, you know, we are prioritizing, obviously, the safety of our employees and the safety of our vehicles and facilities. So, you know, we continue to provide service. And obviously, you mentioned we are working through some pretty significant budget challenges right now.
Let's talk about that. You know, you said obviously it's a challenge to manage in this environment. We've been talking regularly over the last year. There were challenges before the pandemic, maintenance backlogs, capital improvements you were working on, pension fund liabilities. There were derailments last summer. Now here comes this pandemic and the financial impact of it. As concerned listeners, how do we put our heads around this deficit? How big a deal is this?
Well, it's a big deal. It's a deficit in the next fiscal year. Right now, we're in the beginning. Our fiscal year starts July 1. So right now, we are at the beginning of fiscal year 2021, which we have balanced in part with hundreds of millions of dollars in funding from the CARES Act. But we are already starting to look ahead to FY22, where we've got, you know, at least the $308 million deficit. And, you know, depending on how ridership trends, it could be worse. So we are starting to take action now in order to address that. And I think given the size and importance of the T, we need to start taking action now in fiscal year 2021 if we want to manage our way through fiscal 2022.
And to be clear, the CARES Act money is essential because without it and the ability to borrow, as I understand it, to pay labor for capital improvements, you might also in this fiscal year be facing about a $700 million gap. Is that right?
Yeah, all told, for the sort of the tail end of FY20, given that the COVID epidemic started in March, and in fiscal year 21, we will be utilizing the entire $827 million that we got in stimulus funding in order to make the budgets work for those 2 years.
So, Steve, I was looking at the projections, and so much of it relies on when ridership returns to certain levels of capacity, and 80% seems to be the big number that the $308 million projection is based on. Lots of variability there. Where is ridership now, and how does it compare to at the beginning of the pandemic? What's that kind of curve over the last 6 months looked like?
Sure. You know, ridership is somewhere between 15 and 20%, but I would say it is very variable between mode. The bus and the blue line and the ride are all at about 40% of the ridership that we had in late February. The rest of the subway system, red, orange, and green, is clustered around 20%, and then commuter rail and ferry is down closer to 10% ridership.
Has that stayed essentially flat, Steve, over the course of the pandemic so far, or has ridership grown in one of those areas?
You know, they've all grown to some degree. We bottomed out sometime in April when bus was down at 20%. So bus has gone from 20% to 40%. The blue line was down at 15%. And then the other subway services were down, you know, 8 to 10%. So it has grown over this period. I think as more people have come out and as the governor's reopening phases have gone through, but we haven't seen big inflection points where, you know, they another phase occurs and, you know, 5 to 10% of the ridership comes back all at once. We haven't seen that yet. We're going to pay special attention to the fall. You know, in September, is the return of college students going to cause an upward jump? BPS right now is going to be remote through November. So, you know, we don't expect that to cause a bump. And we'll see if certain offices open up a little bit more as well.
So just quickly, Steve, for our listeners, BPS will begin bringing students back into the classroom as the plan goes in a phased approach beginning in October, but students won't all be fully back in with the older grades not coming in until early to mid-November, just for our listeners. So if that is the case, these projections are looking at 80% ridership potentially by September 2021 or January 2022. What is happening in those projections that is taking ridership and the bus from 40% to 80% or on other forms of transportation from like 15 or 20% to 80%?
Yeah, we're not expecting to get up to 80% ridership until September 2022 in our projection. So September 2021, pardon me. So, you know, that would be after this fiscal year is over. Right now we're doing the best we can to forecast scenarios where people gradually return, offices open up, and ridership increases. We did go through the exercise of saying, geez, what if the 80% number either comes significantly later or if it doesn't come at all? And, you know, unsurprisingly, if ridership doesn't come back, our budget situation becomes more difficult to solve just because the revenue isn't there.
Let's talk about buses for a minute. Steve, you were talking about ridership on buses, especially on certain lines, I think, really being higher significantly. We know from historic research that there's a correlation between reliance on bus and socioeconomic status, where you live in the city, race. It can be an economic and social justice issue, just as we have learned that patterns of spread and vulnerability and access to healthcare can also be racial justice and socioeconomic justice issues. So how are you thinking about this reliance on buses, and what are you doing to respond to it, to protect people's safety, to not have people too crowded together on buses?
You make a great point. It's our ridership on buses at 40%, but that is not evenly spread through bus lines. And we have, we have a number of bus lines that serve economically disadvantaged areas there where ridership is significantly higher. And what we've done for the fall schedules is we have moved buses off of other lines where there is lower ridership. In some cases, we have suspended some routes, and we've put more capacity in the places where we have observed crowding. In addition, you know, we continue to require masks on our vehicles. We also collect and distribute real-time crowding data for about 70% of our buses that you can get on MBTA.com and a number of third-party apps, so that, you know, if folks want to see how crowded is the bus that's coming towards me and is there a less crowded bus shortly behind it, they have that information for the people who have the flexibility to move their travel plans around. I fully acknowledge not everyone has that privilege.
Let's talk about masks, Steve. When we talked in May, you said that essentially the T couldn't enforce mask usage on the T for riders. And I wonder, is that still the policy of the T? Has that changed? I do know that masks are mandatory in order to ride the T, but what about enforcement?
Masks are required on the T as part, you know, based on the governor's executive order. There's a couple exceptions for health in the executive order, and it also precludes you from demanding that people prove that they have a health condition. So it, you know, it puts us in a position where we really need people to wear masks on the T for their safety and the safety of others. It puts us in a position where it would be difficult to enforce, and I think there's a number of problematic issues around making that a law enforcement issue. And I don't think there's any, you know, I don't think there's any transit property in the country that is treating it as a law enforcement issue. We're really asking folks to comply with it. It's the right thing to do for yourself. It's the right thing to do for your fellow passengers and our employees.
So just to clarify, the T police, for example, do not have a role that they are now playing in enforcing mask usage on the T.
No, and in fact, I think the executive order does not, even if we wanted to, does not give them the opportunity to do that.
So how do you help riders feel safe then if, I mean, we, Steve, social media is full of memes and videos from all over the country of people refusing to wear masks inside all kinds of stores and buildings, and the employees of those stores and buildings feeling helpless to enforce that, or sometimes trying to force people out of a store. With the close proximity and how important the T is for people to get to and from work to get to places they need to go, how do you help them feel safe?
I mean, we have put forward a pretty extensive campaign, Ride Safer, where we're asking people to wear masks. We've got visuals in many of our stations and our buses, again, asking people to wear masks. When I ride on the system, I see people wearing masks. People are, by and large, complying. And, you know, I hope people continue to do so. I do think mask wearing has sort of become normative now around when you're out and around, at least in the greater Boston area. And I hope that continues. It is a troubling trend nationally where it's gotten wrapped up in a bunch of other issues. It's the right thing to do from a public health perspective when we're asking our riders to comply.
So you're dropping prices starting September 1st. So cash and Charlie ticket prices are going to be lowered to match Charlie card prices.
Yes.
Price decreases are not something we see a lot. What was the thinking here and why started on September 1st?
The thinking was this is something that a broad group of advocates had asked for, so that folks who do not have a Charlie card but are using cash or a Charlie ticket were in effect paying a surcharge, and they were saying that the prices should be equalized. So that's something that the board decided they wanted to do this year. So we put it in place. It is the precursor to a much larger multi-year fare transformation project, which is going to phase out the use, not right now, but eventually phase out the use of cash on buses, and also give people a lot more options in terms of the fare media that they can use. If you still want to use some variant of the Charlie card, you can, but you'll also be able to use a bunch of different other types of media.
You have said elsewhere that everything's on the table in terms of what might have to happen or ideas to close the gap and get the T back to financial stability. What might not happen that you have planned for in order to close this gap? What might go away?
You know, I think we're right at the beginning of a public dialogue on this. We want to present to the board some options. So we are looking at everything, in terms of being aggressive about new revenue sources. Unfortunately, right now, a lot of the things that we depend on for revenue, like parking, isn't being that utilized. So we can tweak that all we want. It's not necessarily going to get us significant new revenue. And we'll also be taking a look at service. Where are the places where we might need additional service, and where are the places where perhaps we're providing service and we don't necessarily have the ridership? So everything is on the table at this point.
Steve, I know you know that riders sometimes have a love-hate relationship with the T. Love the T, rely on it, love the freedom of it, get frustrated with some of the history of derailments, the challenges, for example, of the winter of 2015, maintenance that's been deferred. But now we have this moment where it feels like the economy is saying the T is existentially in threat, and no one wants that. What do we do to make sure our T is still here for all our riders?
This is why we've engaged in this process now, right? We have a budget for the next fiscal year that is balanced. We need to start planning now. We need to attempt to set aside as much money as we can to address the gap in FY22, and that's what we're doing. I expect that we will have difficult conversations this fall, but I think the intent is to make sure that we preserve an MBTA that works for this region. And we preserve a base here at the MBTA that at some point in the future, we can begin to build out from again.
And that is Steve Poftak, the general manager of the MBTA. Steve, I appreciate you joining us. Good to talk to you on Radio Boston again.
Thanks for having me. Take care.